afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Monday, November 14th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Well, we had some more pressure on gold today. We're looking at 1218 New York spot aftermarket, down 10 bucks. At 1218, silver was down 53 cents today, a little over 3% at 1694. Platinum was down $14 at 933, and palladium just kind of makes me chuckle, up 21 bucks, up 3% at $697. USDX is on a tear, back over 100.02, up 1.03, with crude oil following barely 0.09 at 43.50. But the paper markets today were not quite on the terror as they have been. The Dow was up 21 points at 18,869. The NASDAQ was down 18 at 5,218. The S&P basically unchanged at 2164. The 10-year yield, 2.22%. That was up 0.10. And let's see, the euro, I believe, of course, was, I think I saw it at 108. Heck, they took it away from my screen. They're not even showing what the euro did. Here it is, 107. And that was down pretty much equal to what the dollar was up, 1.10. European markets, Japan took a hike to the upside over almost 2%. Pretty much everything else, the European and Asia markets were flat. So, another interesting day in the markets. You know, I received Doug Nolan's commentary about what happened last week. And folks, if you can get to the Credit Bubble Bulletin online, pull it up. He really did have a nice breakdown on truly what happened. And again, it shows just how dysfunctional these markets are. And everyone had their bets set up prior to the election. And then when the election surprised everyone, it was basically doing the short covering of the century. And so, but he goes a little more into details, of course, and about how the derivatives played an important part, the enormous derivative positions that had accumulated in the markets prior to the election, and how in the event of the surprising outcome that they had to have been written, market insurance would be forced to hedge their losses. So, again, it really kind of makes a little sense on what was really going on. You know, it's the mainstream media who's just talking about, you know, things are great and, you know, so forth and whatnot. But so if you can get to his website, I'm going to try to have it in the newsletter. I don't know if we'll try to get it out in a separate edition. Since today's has already been put together. So, and he goes on, he says it's no coincidence that Wednesday's wild reversal ranks right up there with three previous major volatility events, two in late 2008 and the other in October of 1987. And so there's just a lot of speculation that's going on. And again, it's a sign of how dysfunctional these markets are.
I think it's a sign of another thing besides that, in that the markets are increasingly computerized. And if someone throws an algorithm, a program into the computer that says, well, Hillary's going to win and blah, 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 and they factor that into the computer, it doesn't happen. Computer A will react, computer B will react to computer A, computer C will react to the two of them, and all of a sudden you get a You get one of these deadly embraces with the computers reacting to each other, and it can happen suddenly. It can happen almost violently, and it's partly because there aren't people there saying, gee, I wonder what this means. The computers are perhaps reacting too quickly, and there's not a human element there to slow things down and, you know, try to figure things out before they react. And I think that's part of the reason for the huge volatility.
Well, I think too, but this is how they trade. I mean, you have these huge hedge funds. You have billions and trillions of dollars, and you're right. You're absolutely correct with the way, you know, that it's all computerized, but yet these trading beasts program and set what the computers do. So you're absolutely correct, and maybe that's why we see the bigger swings to what we have experienced. So it takes both instances, I believe, to see what we've seen. But yet, to me, that is a sign of a dysfunctional market, because no one's really
well. The market
driving
is supposed to be based on people.
No,
ultimately, the market
car.
Is supposed to be based on people, not computers, not even computer programmers. They're supposed to be, the idea behind the market is that there is some sort of collective wisdom, and everybody moves at the same time. We all go up, we all go down, go sideways, whatever. But there is a presumption that the markets are determined by people, and there is a presumption that the people somehow, in a collective sense, arrive at a correct price at any given moment.
Well, I think
when we put those computers in, the people are removed from the market. And now it's something else. It's like having one guy's computer program playing chess against somebody else's computer program. And there's something lost. The human element is disappearing from it. And I'm not sure that it's a good thing.
Well, I think also that why we see some of these huge voids in these markets is you have 24-hour trading anymore. You have a globalized system from one exchange to the next in various forms, various currencies, emerging markets. I mean, heck, last week, Mexico pretty much, their currency was almost busted. And so you have that 24-hour trading, which is in part is the computer trading. Maybe if we didn't have that one point in time, the markets could take a breath, you know, until a little bit of thought would go into it and so forth. But, yeah, there's multiple reasons, absolutely. But the whole point of all this, after what we've just said, is there's no fundamentals that have been applied to get the numbers that we've seen. And that's truly the bottom line. I mean, you have all these discussions about how, you know, with Mr. Trump being president, everyone talks about, the great building and extensions that we're going to see in the infrastructure. Some of the commodity prices, you know, have risen. The talk of more inflation coming into the markets. Well, more inflation coming into the markets would mean higher gold prices. So if they continue that talk, we will see a reversal here shortly in the gold prices, I believe. But, you know, Doug Nolan says we're pretty much, you know, a honeymoon. He views it as a honeymoon period, but he believes it will be short-lived.
And what does he think is going to happen after the honeymoon?
Well, he believes that we're in a global bond bubble, that he believes is the daddy of all bubbles, and we've seen the unraveling. And that leaves him, concerned. Is this the moment? I mean, we've had a 30-year bond bubble. There's been talk of this bubble unraveling for years.
And what happens if it does unravel? What happens to the price of bonds or the interest rates? What happens if the bubble does pop?
You lose a lot of assets in this world. So I'm not quite sure what your question is.
Well, I'm just trying to understand what he thinks is going to happen. He's expecting the price of bonds to fall.
Rates would rise, values would fall, assets would evaporate.
What can't be paid won't be paid. I mean, sooner or later, that's to me the threat on this thing. Someone's going to have to face up to the fact. And I don't know when they're going to do it, but they are caught in a situation where they can't pay the debt and they can't repudiate the debt. So what are they going to do with the debt? That's the problem that they're facing. And I think the bubble is a good analogy, because the bubble is going to pop. And when it does, there will be a certain suddenness and a certain violence. as people discover that U.S. bonds all of a sudden aren't worth what they were previously, and they're not just talking about U.S. bonds. They're talking about bonds around the world. The whole world is awash in debt. There's too much debt out there, and more than can possibly be paid, and it can't be. You can't pay it, and you can't rescind it either. It's exactly, I think the world is in a situation similar to what we've seen in Greece. When Greece elected Tsipras and his new financial minister back a couple of years ago, they admitted Greece was bankrupt. And they just wanted to file for bankruptcy and be done with it. But instead, they've been in this long, drawn-out process where the powers that be are trying to get Greece to perhaps pay on the debt or pay something on the debt, but they can't let them revoke the debt with bankruptcy. They can't cancel the debt. The debt has to stay on the books as if it is performing, even if any fool can see it's never going to be paid. Because if they cancel the debt, they have to cancel out bonds that are in bank vaults, that are in pension funds, that people are relying on as a source of paper wealth. It's used as collateral to make loans, to build shopping centers and factories and businesses and buy homes and cars and TVs. If something happens to those pieces of paper and someone says, whoops, we can't pay the debt, we can't pay the debt, and therefore we're just going to cancel these things or void, that paper capital disappears. For every dollar's worth of debt, there's a dollar's worth of paper capital. Cancel the debt, dollars worth of debt, you have to cancel the correlative paper dollars worth of paper assets. And we can't do that. Can't do it. It's the economy. U.S. economy can't survive if a significant amount of debt is canceled. I think this is why government changed the bankruptcy laws now about 5 years ago. I don't remember clearly when, but they changed back.
2007, 2006.
So 10 years ago. Yeah. 10 years ago, they anticipated we're coming to a time when a lot of people are going to want to file bankruptcy, and you can't cancel the debt in a debt-based monetary system without collapsing the whole economy. You can't pay the debt, you can't cancel the debt, what are you going to do? You're going to try to hold this thing steady, more or less, and kick the can down the road again and again until finally we reach the inevitable conclusion. But they're going to try to postpone it perhaps as long as possible. They've certainly been trying to postpone it, but the day is coming when somebody's got to say, we can't pay the debt.
One of his ending remarks, he talks about the weak links. I mean, oftentimes we think, oh, it's just going to be the U.S. or Europe or China or Russia, but there's a lot of little weak links, and we saw that last week. And what he talks about is this bubble excess. It's systemic. He says, look closely last week and one can see the weak links. You got Mexico, Brazil, South Africa, Indonesia, mm-hmm. Poland, Hungary, Argentina, emerging markets generally, Ireland, Italy. So anything could happen in any one of these countries. We've seen how their currencies were decimated last week. And you know, to have a low currency is one thing, but to have your currency decimated is something different. You had Italian bond yields. They were all the way back up to 2%. They were trading at 7% in early 2012. So, yeah, it's interesting to see all these things happen, and yet when you listen to the mainstream media, they're just euphoric, you know. Oh, wow, yeah. You know,
it's like looking at the dollar index, all right? While these other currencies are perhaps collapsing, being seriously devalued, I've been arguing for most of a year there's a teeter-totter relationship between the fiat dollar, which is the world reserve currency, and the balance of the currencies in the world. When they are predominantly inflating and becoming less valuable, it follows in this teeter-totter relationship the dollar must go up and become more valuable. It must go into deflation, and that's what we're seeing to some extent. The dollar is now over. It's the dollar on the U.S. dollar index. First time it's been this high. I don't know.
I looked the other day, but I can't recall.
Well, I don't know, but it's several years since I've seen the dollar index up over 100 points. At least that's my recollection.
early 2000s.
Now, a lot of people say, yay, we have a stronger dollar. Well, yeah, we have a stronger dollar, but when the dollar gets stronger due to deflation, right, it is anathema for debtors. And the government is the biggest debtor in the world. It's just nothing but trouble because you have to pay off your debts in more expensive dollars. Everybody out there in the audience who's ever bought a home knows that when you got the mortgage, someone encouraged you to take out the mortgage, explaining that you would be able to pay off your debt with cheaper dollars due to inflation, and that would be good for you. You'd be getting over and the bank would be losing. All right? But when we go into deflation, deflation is terrible for debtors. It means you pay off your debt with more valuable dollars, and the government's the biggest debtor in the world. Right now, when the U.S. dollar index goes over 100, it has increased the real size of the national debt by several percent. Now, the number is still the same, but the value of the dollars is higher. The real purchasing power of the debt is increased. Government can't pay its debt as easily with deflation as they can with inflation. And it means that if we go into inflation, we lose the dollar. If we go into deflation, we risk losing the government to bankruptcy. We are caught between the rock and the hard place right now. And for the moment, the rest of the world is getting inflation. We're getting deflation, stronger dollar. We're bad for government. Government doesn't want a stronger dollar. Right? Government wants inflation in this country just like the rest of it. And we can't all have it because we're world reserve currency. The rest of the currencies are on the other end of the teeter-totter. When they inflate, we deflate. When we inflate, they deflate. All right? And we're caught right now in just a situation where, how are we going to get out? You know, Trump has been elected, but he isn't going to think his way through out of this. We really are caught in a circumstance that no one, so far as I'm able to understand, I don't think it's possible for anyone to be sufficiently wise. I mean, you resurrect Solomon, bring him back and say, okay, Saul, what are we going to do? He goes, you got me, baby. So I don't know. This is the only thing that can happen. This situation we have with the debt, it has to be canceled. And the reason is because paying the debt is now a drag on the economy. Assuming that the government wants this economy to prosper, wants you and me to prosper, assuming that's true, they have to get rid of the debt. And they can't do it politely or civilly. It can only be done suddenly, unexpectedly, probably, and perhaps even violently. We're going to take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners to visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you give us a call and take advantage of all of these super low prices here at Discount Gold and Silver. Once you sign up to the website, make sure you touch on the newsletter, sign up for the newsletter, and of course you can listen to these programs that are archived on a daily and weekly basis. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And remember our new address here in Berlin, Maryland, P.O. Box 276, Berlin, Maryland 21811.
Okay.
What's next, Al?
Oh, I don't know. We can talk about computers a little bit.
Well, you know, I just want to, I got something here. You know, you're talking about debt going into the break. Hmm. And we know what the true debt is. I mean, there are estimates. We mention it eight times a week, you know, where anywhere from 70 trillion to 200 trillion. But it's interesting, I believe, how you see more and more articles that are relating to the amount of debt that we do have and just how much debt does the government really have, and that it just continues to grow, and we know that, and how they, and how there's different sections of the government where they, you know, it just doesn't apply when they release the budget deficit for the fiscal years. And so there was an article out today talking about how the government's reported budget deficit is lower than the actual growth in the national debt. Let's see. It said that the actual national debt grew by $1.4 trillion, not $587 billion, but $1.4 trillion. And why the big difference? And it has to do with, you know, just how they, how timing is, how some things are actually reported. It has things to do, of course, with the politics. And it goes on to explain about how when the fiscal year began in 2016, the U.S. had already reached the debt ceiling and normal borrowing had been frozen for a couple of months. And that means,
well,
that
with the borrowing frozen, yeah, or was the reports of borrowing frozen?
Well, it was frozen until the debt ceiling had been lifted. The total debt level started at an artificially low point and then quickly rose from there. And then on that first day that the debt ceiling was lifted, you had all this pent-up borrowing demand that prompted the national debt to jump more than $300 billion, but that wasn't on the initial budget deficit. So it's, again, it's the timing of how everything is. So again, it wasn't the $587 billion budget deficit that was reported. It was $1.4 trillion. And then it's also, they go in about how the U.S. government steals from our, you know, Social Security and so forth and whatnot. And so it's, you know, it's fuzzy math, and that is really true.
Oh, yeah, it's
math.
New math.
It's new
it doesn't
math.
Matter what the answer is, so long as you feel good about yourself.
Core math.
You know, Alan Greenspan has spoken out a couple of times in the last, several times in the last, I'd say four, maybe 6 months, and he's advised people something's got to be done about entitlements. And most of the people and many of the people in the audience have probably heard Mr. Greenspan or read articles where he's saying something's got to be done to curtail entitlements. All right? But what does he mean by entitlements? He means promises to pay money. He means debt. He is admitting when he talks about entitlements, he said, well, we owe people, we've promised to give people some money. We can't pay. We can't do this. And he has explained repeatedly that the reason for this is the money we spend on paying these entitlements, paying these debts, although he seems reluctant to use the word term debt. He wants to call it entitlements, but we're talking about pretty much the same thing. Right? He's saying we have to get rid of the this debt because every dollar we spend paying entitlements and or by implication paying off existing debt is a dollar we can't use to invest in new equipment, new factories, new technology that would lay the foundation for more productivity and therefore more prosperity, and people would have a better standard of living on average if we had money to invest in our in the productivity and the things that contribute to productivity, and therefore we would become more prosperous. And he's correct. What he's saying is that the debt is now going to hold us in an era of austerity, and we're not going to prosper. We're not going to get better. We're going to get worse as long as this debt remains and we are expected to pay this. Just like, as I said earlier in the program, it's like Greece. All right? They got into trouble. They wanted to file for bankruptcy, but the powers that be persuaded them no. They restructured their debt some, write off half of it. They want to restructure more. They're resisting that. They're telling them you got to keep this debt around and you can't just file for bankruptcy and cancel all your debt because the financial consequences will be too great. And it's because we've used your debt instruments as collateral in banks and in pension funds. And under fractional reserve banking, we can take $1 billion worth of sovereign debt, that is to say U.S. bonds or Greek bonds or whatever bonds are the banks are willing to accept, and they use them as collateral, and under fractional reserve banking, they can lend out multiple times the face value of those bonds that they're holding in the bank vault. If they've got, in this country, I believe it's 9 times. If we put $1 billion worth of bonds in the bank, the banks in theory can lend out $9 billion worth of money. This probably explains why the government was so interested to fund the banks that were too big to fail. They assumed that if we gave them money, then the banks would turn around and they would lend the money. They just got it for free. Why not lend it to the great unwashed under fractional reserve banking? Government gives $1 billion to the bank, and the bank loans $9 trillion to the public and stimulates the economy. The banks, however, said, huh, to heck with that. We're not lending this stuff out at near zero interest rates. So the banks took the trillion or the $1 billion or whatever they got, and they loaned it to foreign countries, emerging markets that were willing to pay 5-10% more interest or more interest on their on the investments. But Europe is the same thing. My understanding is that Europe's fractional reserve banking can go as high as 23 times. So let's suppose a bank is sitting there and they've got $1 billion worth of Greek bonds. And somebody says, and Greek says, we want to file for bankruptcy and cancel the value of those bonds. In theory, those bonds got $1 billion worth of Greek bonds. They could be the basis for $23 billion, in theory. I'm not saying they loan that much, but it's my understanding that at least some of the European banks can lend up to 23 times what the face value of their currency or their assets in the vault are. In theory, there could be... If Greece files bankruptcy on $1 billion, the banks might have to call in $23 billion in loans. You can see this magnifying effect, this multiplier effect, and it's going to be just devastating. They can't cancel the debt, but they can't pay the debt. What are we going to do? They're going to try to hold Greece in a state of suspended animation and perpetual austerity until the Greeks finally pull out their six guns and shoot. All right? They'll probably have a shooting revolution before this is done in order to get out from under the debt. And here in this country, we are facing a similar kind of problem. Can't cancel the debt without wiping out a correlative amount of paper capital, and you can't pay the debt because it's too huge and we're too broke. What are we going to do? Again, we're headed for some sort of a cataclysmic event where somehow, some way, somebody's got to make the debt disappear. Greenspan says you got to make the entitlements disappear. Entitlements are just debts. All right, they're not. When he says entitlements, he doesn't mean all the debts that are out there. He's not talking about. He's trying to distinguish between the entitlements that is paid to people who receive welfare, people who receive subsidies. He's trying to distinguish between that and the U.S. Treasury bonds. He's not saying we got to cancel the Treasury bonds, but in the end, if you're going to cancel a significant amount of debt in order to have some sort of revenue left over that you can invest in infrastructure and technology and whatever in order to increase our productivity and our prosperity, ultimately we're talking about how do we get rid of the debt. No easy way. And that's part of the reason, it's the big reason, from my perspective, why you get hold of some gold or silver. All right? One way or another, these paper debt instruments are going to be canceled. Nobody's going to like it, but they can't be paid, and they can't be repudiated. My guess, and that's all it is, nobody knows what's going to happen here, or at least I don't, that's for sure. But how will this manifest? We hear the term reset on a fairly regular basis. People talk about there's going to be a global reset. Sometimes they talk about a national reset with a currency, with a nation's currency. But the real reset we're talking about, I think, is global. And all of the nations of the world, the governments of the nations of the world, are going to get together and say, look, we've got to get rid of this debt. And they've got to reach some sort of an agreement among themselves that all of the debt is at least restructured and diminished, or perhaps postponed. We're not going to cancel your debt, ladies and gentlemen. If you got a $100,000 bond in your pension fund or in the bank account, we're not going to take that away from you, but it was due to be paid in 2 years. Well, it'll probably be 20 before you can collect on that bond, see? It's still good, but it won't be good in 2 years. As promised, it'll be good in 10 years or 20 years or, I don't know, pull a number out of the hat. Where are they going to go with it? But the debt can't be paid, and yet it can't be endured. And what are we going to do? Again, get Solomon and see if he can solve this one. I don't think he can.
You know, you mentioned Greece, and that is one of Obama's stops when he leaves today. And I thought to myself, why would he be going to Greece? I don't know if that was just one of the countries he hasn't hit yet. You know,
probably got a golf
years,
course he hasn't.
Perhaps,
visited.
But I just
the one golf course in all the world that he hasn't visited yet, and he wanted to get the little sticker to put on his suitcase. I golf Greece.
But I just thought it was a little odd that of all places he chose. I mean, you can see, you know, many of the countries that he's going to. You can understand that Greece and Peru. You know, but anyway. You were going to talk about...
Well, he's probably also checking countries to see who has the weakest extradition. Yeah, extradition laws, just in case. You know, we just talk to, you know, suppose I moved here. Would you suppose I could be extradited back to the United States or not? Looking for a friendly host country.
What's next, Al? You had something about robots or computers? Or?
Well, that's, you know, this goes to... The reason I do this, focus on these computers from time to time and bring up these stories, is to illustrate a fundamental idea. There is a growing, it's a small but loud, it is not the moral majority or the silent majority, it is a very loud minority that's advocating cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. All right, and there's a host of them coming out. Almost everybody's going, "Hey, I've got a new cryptocurrency." And people invest in it, and some of these things increase in apparent value rapidly. But point I'm trying to make when we talk about these computer stories, and I'll have two of them here, is that you can't trust anything that's digital. I mean, stuff just disappears. It just disappears. It vaporizes. There is no security. If you've got a computer that's hooked up to the internet, and that's not just my computer, I'm saying if a bank has a computer, if the government has a computer, you got a computer hooked up to the internet, whatever you got on it is not secure, and that includes cryptocurrencies. All right? It's easy to steal this stuff, at least for hackers. Here's an article from the Hacker News, which is actually a very good post. If you haven't seen it, It's a very good technical publication on hacking computers. And the headline here is, even a single computer can take down big servers using Black Nurse attack. Yes, you need only a single laptop with a decent internet connection rather than a massive botnet to launch overwhelming denial of service, that's DOS, denial of service attacks, in order to bring down major internet servers and modern day firewalls. Dubbed Black Nurse attack, or a low rate ping of death. It sounds like something with Fu Manchu melody. Mm-hmm. You have the ping of death. Death. We're having a ping of death attack. The technique can be used to launch several low-volume denial of service attacks by sending specially formed internet control message protocol packets or pings that overwhelm the processors on servers protected by firewalls from Cisco, Palo Alto networks, among others. Now, the first point here is, nothing digital is safe and secure if it's connected to the internet. Not text, not visits to porn sites, not digital bank accounts or cryptocurrencies. None of it is safe. They can be hacked. Point two, for now at least, it appears that the hackers are evolving their ability to hack into systems more rapidly than major institutions are developing effective protection from hackers. It seems like the hackers, for the moment at least, are winning the war. I don't know if that's true, but that's the appearance. Until these two points are overcome by major institutions, you've got to be a little bit crazy to store your wealth, identification, or other important data in a digital format on a computer tied to the internet. People encourage you to do it, but it can't be secured. And here's another one from the Hacker News. And the headline is, over 300 million adult Friend Finder accounts exposed in massive data breach. Adult Friend Finder, a casual dating website with the tagline "Hook up, find sex, or meet someone hot now," has suffered another. They had one last year. Now they got another massive data breach, and this time it's worse than last year. Over 412 million accounts. All right. From, again, Adult Friend Finder, Cams, Penthouse, and Strip Show have all been hacked. It's the largest breach ever seen, according to leaked source, an entity that chases these sorts of problems. And my comment on this, Melody, is nothing sacred.
Nothing.
That you can't even visit porn sites or hook up with complete strangers without being reported on the internet.
No, you have to go to the dark web to do that.
And even there. It's not safe.
They say it's pretty difficult.
Well, we'll talk more in a moment. We're going to take a break, a couple commercials, and Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231. And the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We were talking about digital cryptocurrencies, and the point I was trying to make with the two articles I read from the Hacker News. Again, a single computer, one computer. They have technology now where a single computer, not a supercomputer, just a single computer with a decent internet connection can take down major servers on the internet. I mean, you can't count. I guarantee it's going to happen. This whatever server's handling your email accounts, whatever, there is going to be a problem. If just 20 high school kids say, ooh, cool, let's do it.
Well, don't you feel more,
it's going to happen to everybody.
Don't you feel more comfortable now that the UN has it?
The UN doesn't have it yet. But they're beagling to get it. At least the URL, control of the URL names, if I understand correctly.
I think it was
but
given
to it won't matter who's got it. This is something, again, and here they hacked over 400 million accounts of people that were engaged in sexual activity or sexual interest on the internet. Good God, there's only 320 million people in this country. This is like twice the number of people that are adults in this country have been identified in this adult friend finder hack. There's no secrecy on the internet, and my point is that as long as that's true, our fascination with cryptocurrencies, and it is significant fascination, the idea that you could you could do your business, you could transact business with a cryptocurrency rather than fiat dollars. And what do you have to pay for taxes on that cryptocurrency? The IRS is just lately starting to talk about taxing these things, but taxing them and finding them are two entirely different things. It's dangerous because these cryptocurrencies change in value dramatically. They've gone from $25 a unit to over $600 a unit. They might have been over 1,000, I don't know, on Bitcoin, and it's fallen back to 600, and I don't know where it is right now. I don't follow it closely, but it's been spectacular changes in value, both up and down. You run the risk of losing capital wealth that you invest into cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin and Ethereum and a few others, I can't think of their names. Right? There's great risk of losing your currency, not simply to hackers, but simply because the value of the currency itself is determined by a market process that it can go to 1,000 and fall back down to 400. And the market process alone can strip you of much of your whatever wealth you've invested into the cryptocurrency. And yet people do it. My understanding is something like 1% of global transactions are now handled in cryptocurrencies. Maybe that's true, maybe not. But it's not, it's a small thing. But it's got big attention. But the question, one of the questions is, I mean, the risks are obvious when you deal with cryptocurrencies. The risk of being hacked and losing everything you had. You opened your little account, you opened your wallet, which is a term they use for a place to store your wealth in terms of cryptocurrencies. You opened your wallet and you said, oh, it's empty. Who got it? Some hacker. All right, that's one thing. You could lose it that way. You can lose it to market forces that reduce the value. It was, you had one unit, it was worth $1,000, and now it's only worth $500. You just lost $500. Why do people invest in cryptocurrencies when they can see these dangers? And the answer is because they don't like fiat dollars. That's the answer. They don't like the government. That's part of the answer. They are engaging in these cryptocurrencies in this, for the same reason that people voted for Donald Trump in the last election.
They
are angry
criminal.
About the government, angry about the financial system, angry about the monetary system, and they're willing to risk losing a lot of their assets just to get out from under government's thumb.
Perhaps it's more of a criminal enterprise, too.
Nah, I don't think it is. I think it's more just people who they don't want to pay taxes. They don't want to be followed. They have things they like to do. Yeah, there's a certain amount of what's defined as criminality. I mean, there are people that were buying drugs on the dark net, perhaps with cryptocurrencies.
Well, look at pornography.
I view that
as criminal.
Oh, but without pornography, Melody, there would never have been an internet. You know, why would people go on the internet just to get the news? I mean, the truth of the matter is pornography probably is the single biggest business on the internet. Yeah.
Really, it is.
Yeah, yeah. 80%. So we joke about it, and I don't mean to make light of it. I'm not arguing that it's a good thing, but I'm saying it's there, and it's not likely to disappear anytime soon. But all of this is open to exposure. All of it is open, made all of your digital data. If you've got a computer, you're tied onto the internet, your digital data, whatever it is. All right? I don't care if it's you're storing wealth in a digital bank account someplace, it's vulnerable. You're storing pictures, pornography pictures, it's vulnerable. People can find evidence of what you've stored. So, what are you going to do about it? It implies that you've got to keep at least one computer that you want to rely on, that you want to do most of your work with, and that you keep your most important documents. You've got to keep it disconnected from the internet. Difficult situation. I mean, if you had a computer and you couldn't plug into the internet, what would you do with it? You know? It means one computer on the internet. If you lose it, you lose it, but it doesn't hold your most important data, doesn't hold your another computer that is kept off the internet, except maybe just once in a while you plug it in, you get some updates, you do whatever has to be done on there, maybe even call your bank, and I don't know. But my point is that it is apparently easy for skillful hackers to steal your identification, steal data about who you are and what you do, and steal whatever digital currency you have that's plugged into the internet. The only way to get around that is keep your money in a tangible form that is not subject to someone just running a couple of keystrokes into a computer and say, let's take his money. You can't take my gold by internet.
I wonder if the FDIC has upgraded their contracts as far as what would constitute them using the insurance to cover people's accounts. I wonder if hacking was ever included, or would that be a situation in which the bank would be not obligated to pay?
I think the banks have to pay that, if at all. I think they have to do it, because at the point in time when the banks come out and say, sorry, we're not liable for the hackers, everybody's going to pull their money out of the banks. It would cause such a loss of public confidence that it wouldn't just be the banks that would be afflicted. It would be even confidence in our digital dollars. Right? There would be, they have to say, oh, don't worry about a thing. We got you. Don't worry about it. Well, that's not going to work forever. Sooner or later, they're going to have to admit, we don't got you. All right? You've been hacked, you lost your wealth, there's nothing we can do about it. I'm taking my pension, I'm leaving the bank.
There is a fine line. Was the client hacked in their computer, or was the bank hacked? So,
well, I think the money's stored in the bank's computer. If I have a conventional bank account, a digital bank account, I have access to it through my computer, but it's not storing my funds on my computer. Maybe my password or whatever, and but the funds in theory are at the bank. It doesn't matter. Again, the big problem is if the internet or bank accounts are convenient enough, where tens of thousands of people can have accounts at a single bank, hundreds of thousands. I have no idea what the maximum number of accounts are at some bank. But if it's convenient enough, where we can have ATM machines that are plugged into the bank, other banks that are plugged into the bank, accounts for all of the thousands of people that have their accounts are accessible digitally. If you're going to make it sufficiently convenient for thousands of ordinary people to access the bank, I guarantee you, you have opened a door wide enough where any skillful hacker can pop right through. And I won't say that every hacker can do it. I'm not saying there's no security, but I'm saying the guys who really know what they're doing, they're going to dance right through the door and your firewall because it's already open to thousands of individuals. You know, you can't do that without leaving an opportunity for hackers to break in. So, you know, the lesson to the moral to the story is as much as if you happen to be critical, skeptical, wary of the U.S. dollar, the fiat currencies of the world, however attractive the digital currencies may appear to be, the cryptocurrencies, in the end, at least for now, they appear to be vulnerable to hacking. And it seems like the hackers are learning their business faster than the people that are defending their accounts and their supplies, which means dangerous business. In the end, the digital currency has no more to offer than the digital dollar. For a moment, for right now, it appears to be more private, might not be taxable, you can get out from under government scrutiny, maybe. But it's still vulnerable to being stolen by hackers, or destroyed by hackers, or even stolen by government. Melody talked earlier, mentioned earlier that said something about something to the tune of governments capturing funds that have been squirreled away in digital accounts. If you want to save your wealth, we live in just an extraordinary time. And it's not safe. And it's not convenient. And part of the reason it's not safe is because the whole world is under so much financial stress right now that people in positions of power are recognizing they got to have some money. And they got to either borrow it or they got to raise taxes or they got to steal it. And they don't care. They've got to have the money to hold the system or the currency to hold this system together. And they're not concerned about how they go about getting it. But they are under so much stress they will grasp at any straw that floats by, including if they got to steal it, they'll steal it. Haven't seen it happen too much yet, but it will. Huh? And there'll be some cock and bull explanation for it, but your only protection in these times of stress, in my opinion, you're going to get your wealth and keep it in a tangible media like gold or silver. There's other things you can do. You can put it into land and guns and tools and food and water and a bunch of other tangible things. You can do that, but if you want something that's liquid that you can take down to the store if necessary and spend, or you can go buy a house or a car or whatever, you're going to be looking for gold or silver coins. So, I just don't see, you know, buyer beware, cryptocurrency advocate beware. This is dangerous business and safe. Safest haven, box of gold coins, squirreled away someplace where nobody's going to find it.
The times haven't changed.
No,
we still live in a time period where, regardless of how well things might look, how good things might look, and optimism and possibly change for good, we still have this major problem that's not going to go away, and it's still going to affect each and every one of us. And the best that we can do is to get prepared.
Yep.
And to get your savings. It's important to get your water, your food, and I mean, you can never be always be prepared. But when it comes to your savings and when it comes to those bank accounts, your IRA accounts, your pension funds, your retirement accounts, get them protected, folks. Get them insured. Have the wealth insurance, which is, of course, gold and silver. Excuse me, Al. And they can give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. We got a couple of minutes. I just want to get this off my desk. I wanted to talk about, and I think I did briefly last week, about Lisbon. There was a meeting, a conference. There was like 53,000 attendees. It was in Lisbon for the first time. It was in Dublin when this was first launched back in 2010. But one of the biggest items that they talked about in the survey that they took is that these investors believe it is inevitable that artificial intelligence is going to destroy millions of jobs. We talk about that all the time. But that the important part is that governments are unprepared for the impact.
Of course,
they're not preparing for this.
So and they're not preparing openly. I guarantee they're preparing something.
I doubt it.
Well, somebody's figuring we got to get rid of these people somehow. What are we going to do with them? I mean, we're getting into difficult, dangerous times.
Millions of jobs. Yep. 93% are seeing that these governments are not prepared. How are these people going to be taken care of? Well, we know. We know how they're going to be taken care of. And boy, are they going to be taken care of.
And you're going to have to take care of yourself ultimately. That's part of the implication here.
Yeah.
We have 15 seconds, Melody. Do you want to close anything?
So again, you know, these are things that are approaching, and it's going to affect us. It's going to affect your children and your grandchildren. So help them. Help them get prepared. And,
okay, folks, we're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.